You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
We're talking Marlins baseball today, this Thursday, October 26th, with our good friend Joe Frisaro, MLB.com Marlins reporter. Joe, we thank you for the time, as always. And, Joe, a couple of items to run down the list here for the Marlins. We'll talk a little Giancarlo. He's been went on Kimmel a few nights ago, which is cool. Won the Hank Aaron Award, of course, prior to Game 2 of the World Series. We'll talk him. We'll talk Ichiro. But speaking of the World Series, that's kind of where I like to start, because as we talk today on this Thursday, it is the off day, the travel day, as the series now shifts to Houston for Games 3 through 5. Houston winning a wacky Game 2, 7-6 in 11 innings. And, Joe, I don't know about you, but I was a little surprised by the – I guess the reaction and the buzz and the hoopla surrounding Game 2, and that, you know, everybody's reaction is kind of along the lines of, you know, wow, this was such a great game and one of the greatest World Series games ever played. And I don't want to be a wet blanket, or maybe I do, but I just think it's been a little overrated, a little overblown. You know, people making a big deal about the 8 home runs hit, and that's all well and good, but to me, there are much more entertaining ways for a baseball game to unfold than by it simply turning into a home run derby hitting contest. You know, I'm not saying it wasn't exciting or entertaining, but to me, I find the reaction to it a little surprising, because it just didn't give me goosebumps like other games have, like, say, Game 7 of last year between the Cubs and the Indians. How soon we forget. Are you in agreement on this, or what's your take on it?
Yeah, I would think it's more under lines of it was a fun game. There was some improbable at-bats, you know, to see Kenley Jansen being vulnerable, you know, to see, you know, George Springer, the guy everyone was ready to bench or certainly drop in the order, come through with the big hits, including the game-winning home run, and just to see the survival mode of trying to get three outs without giving up two more runs that the Astros did, and the Dodgers resolve, and Seager, you know, the question to him being ready, and he comes in, hits second, hits a home run. It just had a lot of interesting, fun storylines. But I think in terms of a classical game, I think Game 1 fit more of that, you know, with the Kershaw-Keuchel battle. That was a quick pace game. That, too, was decided ultimately on some home runs. But, you know, just, you know, the drama was there. But I just think both Games 1 and 2 just show just how special baseball is and unpredictable it is, and unlikely heroes arise, and you know, stars stand out like Verlander. But, you know, we're also in a short attention span society right now where, you know, we kind of forget anything historical. And like you noted, how great Game 7 of the World Series was last year, but that's clearly a distant memory in the 140-character Twitter world we're in these days. But it was a great game. Where it goes historically, I'd have to look at that a little bit more. But, yeah, I did hear some of the stuff and people declaring the greatest Game 2 in World Series history. You know, there have been, what, about 120 or so Game 2s in World Series history. So I think, you know, we'd have to do a little more research. But certainly in terms of entertainment, I think it was a big win for baseball in terms of, you know, just a really impressive showcase and a fun thing to watch. And, you know, with all that late-inning drama, you kind of forget it was, what, a four-and-a-half-hour game. So, you know, it just was a special night, I thought, for baseball.
Yeah, that's a good point. I certainly agree with that, in that, you know, as you said, the social media world we live in now, it's all about, you know, creating buzz and excitement and, you know, through social media. And this game certainly checked all those boxes in appealing to the younger demographic, the younger crowd, and getting them interested. And maybe that we see a rating spike for the ensuing games of the series. I don't know. You know, time will tell on that. But again, as you said, a good point in that it is generating discussion. At the same time, I feel like, you know, to have the Dodgers' first hit of the game, which was not a home run, occur in the 10th inning, I mean, that kind of blew my mind. And then the other thing that I find a little, you know, odd or weird is that a big deal is being made about the Astros becoming the first team ever in a postseason game to hit home runs in the 9th, 10th, and 11th, in 11th innings. Now, that's all well and good, but the way I see that is, well, the reason they did that is because their pitchers couldn't finish the job. You know, they wouldn't have had that opportunity if Giles does his job, if other guys in the pen do their job and slam the door when they were supposed to, but the game kept going on and on, giving them the opportunity to hit those home runs. So when I see people making a big deal about that record, it just strikes me as weird because the entire reason they had that chance is because they couldn't, the pitchers couldn't get it done. And I just found that a little strange.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that I love that stat. 3 home runs in extra innings, a World Series extra innings record or postseason. Yeah, because no one blows 3 home runs in extra innings. Yeah. As you know, normally the games don't last that long that you would have 3, you know, you might have that dramatic walk-off or, you know, the home run that puts you in front. But, to get 3, and, it was funny. I think at one point in the game, Matt, I think the hits, you know, as they go to commercial break, they're like, whatever the score was at the time, it was like Astros 14 hits, like 4 runs. The Dodgers, like 4 hits, 5 runs, or something like that. It's like they have more runs than hits, it just kind of jump out at you that game was just, an improbable night. Obviously, this is the year of the home run, and I don't have a problem with home runs. I think 8 homers in the game, if it happens, it happens, and it does draw attention. I mean, I cover a guy who hit 59 of them this year. So, I do like the home run. I like what it does to baseball. I think since the earliest of time, the game really has kind of been popularized around the home run. So, again, if that brings more people in and they're talking a little bit more and gets more people talking and excited about baseball, I look at that as a win for baseball.
Yeah, no question there. And like we were saying, we'll see what the audience is and the buzz surrounding games 3 through at least 5, as this is going to go at least 5 games with the series tied at 1 win apiece. So, we'll see. I mean, it wasn't a bad thing what happened last night. I just found the hype around it to be a little excessive considering the way the game unfolded. Maybe it's an aberration. We get back to more traditional baseball throughout the rest of the Fall Classic. But, of course, time will tell. Joe, let's run down some of the news items as we touched on at the onset of the podcast. Giancarlo Stanton, of course, prior to Game 2, winning the Hank Aaron Award on the National League side. Jose Altuve wins it on the American League side. And obviously a great honor for Giancarlo. I don't think it surprised anybody given the monster year he had with the 59 home runs, the most in the game in at least over 10 years. And then to further that, he appears on Jimmy Kimmel Live a couple nights ago and showed a lot of charisma and charm and was very, easygoing. And, I know that there's always a larger discussion about, who is the face of the game? Who is the guy that's going to appeal to a mass audience and bring in more fans and really be that guy to connect to a larger group of people outside of, the fan base in the city you play for? And I think that, things could change, but it seems like Giancarlo's kind of on that track to becoming that guy because, he's not a bad-looking dude, that's for sure. He's a great baseball player. He's young. I think he checks all the boxes, and maybe he does become that guy. Do you see that happening, perhaps?
Yeah, and, as someone who has seen him from the day he got drafted when he was 17 years old and being this huge kid who I remember meeting on the field at Dodger Stadium saying, how did you, play baseball over football? To see him what he's become. I mean, he has that superhero type of persona. He's probably going to do movies at some point in his career. He can be, he could be moody. People see that side here when things aren't going well, but he could be really engaging. And that smile, we saw it on the Kimmel show, the personality kind of comes out. There's a genuine nature to Stanton. He's not a real big pretentious guy. I think we probably should have taken a hint at the fact that he was doing Kimmel and in L.A. Normally, Stanton always spends October out of the country doing the vacation and traveling the world. But the fact that he was there in the game 1 or game 2 at Dodger Stadium probably should have been a hint that he was going to win the Aaron Award. That was probably the only reason he was in town, even though he lives out there. He doesn't necessarily hang around out there at this time. So, to see him get that... And you're right. I've always thought this guy, to be Miami's Mickey Mantle, the guy who really kind of popularized this sport and could stand above the industry. I think he kind of showed a bit of that personality during the All-Star game when he embraced being the face of the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game. He kind of took that on himself. We haven't always seen the host, best star of the host city, do that. Stanton did it. The fact that he hits home runs at such an alarming rate. And as you know, he's going to turn 28 next month. He's still young. He's just reaching his prime. As someone who roots for him individually and likes him a lot as a person, you know, I think he certainly can accept that role and be clearly one of the faces, if not the most recognizable face in the industry. And that's a really good start. And I hope the PA, MLBPA, keeps, you know, pushing their players to be a little bit more like the NBA and NFL, where their players are on more national commercials and you know, are kind of being known, you know, broader. The T-Mobile ads have got Stanton, you know, some recognition nationally as well. So, you know, it's really good to see him being kind of a face of the sport. And he represents the sport very well. He's very classy. As you say, he comes across, he has a really good look. He's so big, but he's like a gentle giant in person. And that appeals to a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, this could be the guy that has that breakthrough mainstream appeal that baseball is so desperately seeking. Baseball has stars. I'm not sure if they have superstars right now. Maybe Giancarlo is the guy that breaks that mold as he continues, you know, to develop both as a player and off the field as well. And going on Jimmy Kimmel Live, certainly not a bad start in that regard. Joe, as we come down the home stretch here, Ichiro says he wants to play until he's 50. He turns 44 within a couple of weeks, I believe. I don't know if the...
He just turned it.
He just turned 44. Okay, yeah. So he wants to play for six more years. I don't know how tongue-in-cheek those remarks are from him. Maybe knowing him, he's serious about that. Are the Marlins serious about bringing him back at least for his age 44 season next year? What do you think?
Well, he has a club option, which I think that the team has until like 4 days after the last game of the World Series. So they have that to exercise. It's $2 million, and I'm not sure it's an automatic. I'm not sure it's a given for sure, you know, with the Jeter regime in and, you know, changes being made and what direction they go. You know, if they continue to carry four bench players, you know, Ichiro strictly plays outfield, and, you know, they might want somebody that can play outfield and infield, you know what I mean, to give a little more versatility. But, you know, at $2 million, he also is kind of a bargain for a fourth outfielder. So, clearly a lot of fan appeal to Ichiro. Obviously not the player he was. He had, I believe, the fewest amount of at-bats in his career, just under 200. You know, he's already got the 3,000 hits. He's already accomplished pretty much everything that an individual can, and he's, you know, clearly on his way to Cooperstown when it's all said and done. But this is a man, Matt, who I could genuinely say just loves playing baseball, and while he says that now he's kind of amended it to at least 50, that's his life. And, you know, when you really, you know, kind of, if you look at it philosophically, like, his first love is baseball. And I think just the reality that he may not play it someday just drives him nuts. Now, he's, you know, he has his place here in South Florida, and he stays around for another, you know, he stayed around and was working out at Marlins Park, which isn't unusual. You know, this guy, any time during the season, if there's an off day, he goes to the ballpark and works out anyway. You know, some guys will go to the park if their pitchers have a throw or guys need to get treatment. Ichiro just goes to the baseball park pretty much every day of his life and does something, whether it's hitting the cage, stretch, throw, you know, do some sort of training and conditioning. And, you know, and the fan of the sport loves to see a guy just hang around as long as possible. I still think it's kind of undecided whether he fits into the Marlins' plans. And if the Marlins don't retain him, I'm not sure how many teams will take a flyer on him. And I would hate to see him have to, like, take a non-roster. I can't imagine him doing that. You know, he'd be guaranteed. Obviously, people say Seattle, and there may be pressure there. But if, you know, Seattle's kind of moving in another direction as well, and Ichiro, you know, if you just want him back for a ceremonial part, or you'd want him back. But Ichiro wants to be a productive guy. He doesn't really just want to be around because people, you know, just want to look at him as a novelty act. So it'll be interesting to see what they do there. I guess I'd go 60-40 feeling they will exercise the option, but that's more of a guess and a hunch than based on, you know, actually knowing that they're making those decisions, you know, as we speak, as the front office is kind of meeting, you know, deciding how to take 18, you know, how to approach 18.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that baseball would be a little bit poorer if Ichiro was not part of a major league club in 2018, and we'll see. If not a Marlins uniform, maybe one of the other 29 teams will take a flyer on the surefire future Hall of Famer Ichiro Suzuki. Joe Fusaro, great place to wrap this one up. We'll do it again at this time next week. Our thanks to you for the time. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras Miami Marlins.